the winning sound of Network Sports.
And a very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guests, heard on Voice of Barbados. You can call us at 441790. You can send a WhatsApp to 2534679 or an email to cricketmason@yahoo.com. Mason and Guests is brought in association with the good friends at ASAP White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASAP White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 da, pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
Well, the West Indies losing again, again and again. South Africa, I was in Guyana. In fact, I only came back this afternoon, and the news is not good at all in Guyana, by extension the Caribbean. And those who support the West Indies side, a very tight battle. In the end, they lost by 40 runs. And we want to do an assessment of that test match and the test series. I note with interest that the West Indies T20 squad has been selected to play against South Africa. No Kyle Mayers, what's going on there? And the CPL starts tomorrow. The women are very much involved, and Peter Miller is already on the line. We want to talk to him about that. And, of course, we want, of course, to look at the possibilities in relation to the upcoming T20 series. It seems as if we are much better at the white ball game. So that's of great importance to us. Kaiso is with us as well. He's in South Africa. I know that it's way past his bedtime. We're going to go to him first of all, to get an assessment of the game and the test series. Hi, Kaiso, how are you?
Good evening from the side. Good morning from good morning here. I've just got a slight power issue, but I'm still very much available. Hence, I'm not pictured because I'm in a different part of South Africa. Oh, as compared to Joburg, I'm actually in East London, where the West Indies played that ODI last year, where Shea Hope made that very good 100. Mm-hmm. And East London also happens to be my hometown. I think Mr. Wallace would have played here. I think also, if I'm not, yes, I think Mr. Wallace would have played here back in 1998, yes.
Indeed. Okay, your assessment of the test match?
Very tight. Very, very, very tight test match. I think the West Indies, with better batting application, had they seen off, especially, I think Keshav Mahadine beat spell. They lost some really, really, really careless wickets. I mean, if Alec Athanase and Jason Holt had just seen off, Dane beat spell, one would have thought that the West Indies would have had just enough in the tank to record a very rare win. But again, I need to step back and realize and say that you guys were right about the dropping of Kimo Roach. That was an explosive spell from Shamar Joseph. It was absolutely exhilarating to watch. Jaden Sales was absolutely fantastic. for the West Indies. I think South Africa's bowling effort was a team effort more than anything else. But I think what we enjoyed the most from this side was Vian Mulder. Vian Mulder has been a player who's been given a lot of opportunities without actually taking them. And I think what you saw in this test match and in this two test series was the small makings of Vian Mulder. And I think one thing that that is starting to rise with Vian Mulder are the comparisons between him and Jacques Kallis at the same stage of their careers. But one of the things I often caution against is that Jacques Kallis was already a proven test match player, because at the same time, 14 matches, Jacques Kallis already had a test match 100 and a test match 50. Whereas Vian Mulder hasn't quite reached that pitch yet. But I think the West Indies lost a test match that they should have won. The first innings were quite dicey because of the nature of the pitch. I mean, we did say last week, because it was only the third test being played in Providence, you could not quite gauge what kind of pitch that they were going to prepare. But I think we had a very good and epic test match to watch that the West Indies lost based on just on a lack of application, because 263 on a pitch that was getting better to bat on was certainly chaseable.
Indeed. Okay, well, what we're going to do, we're going to go to Neil Barry. I know that Peter Miller's with us. He doesn't have a great deal of time. We're going to nip across to him very soon with the women starting tomorrow, and we want to hear from him in terms of the CPL. Neil Barry, former Guyana keeper, some critical moments of the game. How do you assess the test match, Neil? Neil, where are you? Are you on Mandela Highway there in Georgetown? Are you in Kitty on Rob Street? Neil? You got to unmute Neil. Dr. Ford, can you help him? You tend to help people. Neil?
Top right-hand corner.
Top right-hand corner,
the microphone. Neil. Maybe Neil is not there.
Oh, he's not
maybe
there?
Maybe he's... Device is there.
His device is there, but he's not there. But certainly, while Neil gets his act
maybe
together,
plan B.
Yeah. Well, let's go across to Peter Miller, whose time is very tight. Peter, you don't have that problem, do you? You're loud and clear and unmuted. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm certainly here. Whether or not I'm clear is for you gentlemen to judge as this interview goes on, right? But absolute pleasure to be here with some of the best cricket broadcasters across the Caribbean, and I'm hugely fortunate to share a microphone with a great number of you. So, hello, Philo. Hello, Tony. How are you doing? I'd say hello to Neil as well, but it doesn't seem that he's with us. But yeah, hello.
Yeah. Okay, you're starting the women. How's it going? You got a good feel for it, of course, Peter.
Yeah, absolutely. I was in Trinidad until yesterday, just arrived in Antigua here just for a few days to make sure everything's all in place for when we get the men's tournament underway. But back for the last few games of the women's tournament at the end of the week. Yeah, really excited. All the players are in place now. We've got some really, really exciting overseas cricketers coming this year. You know, we've got the likes of Jemima Rodrigues, Chika Pandey, Lauren Winfield-Hill, Jess Jonathan. The real star-studded overseas players, far and away, I think the strongest player lineup that we've had for a WCPL in its three seasons so far. Yeah, and just really excited to be getting underway. And I think for me, the most important thing about WCPL this year is that six of the seven matches are going to be nighttime matches, and that's not something we've been able to do before. And I think a lot of what's made CPL so special is those fantastic nights in Trinidad, Barbados, Guyana, elsewhere, under the lights. It's kind of what makes cricket and T20 cricket feel special for me. So yeah, really excited to be getting underway, and hopefully there'll be lots of people popping along and buying their tickets in Trinidad to support us.
Yeah, Doc, I know you would have questions for Peter, and of course Philo as well. Doc?
All right, good night to the panel and to listeners. Peter, the women's side of CPL is still in its infancy, and you know, all over the world they're looking at making the remuneration for women and men equal as they strive for equality, but there was a sense that the female side was just something that was put on, was being subsidized. How do you see the women's version of the CPL growing into something that will, you know, generate the income to put CPL on an even bigger footing, stronger footing?
Yeah, hopefully it's moving in that direction. You know, we've got some really great commercial partners that have joined us this year. Massey have been a fantastic title sponsor. Republic Bank, Visa, you know, these are big names in the Caribbean that are getting involved and getting behind it. It's got to grow, but it's got to grow slowly. I mean, if you think the first CPL didn't start with 34 matches, I think it started with 20. You know, it's important to build from a solid foundation. And I think it's been one of the strengths of CPL is that it's not expanded rapidly. I think it would have been very easy to listen to some of the calls from certain people saying that CPL's men's tournament should be 8 teams. You know, I think maybe we'll have 7 in 2025, that would be nice. But, you know, I think it's about building from that solid base. Certainly at the moment, it is very much a situation that the women's tournament isn't going to be producing the same amount of income as the men's does. But I think it's for us as the custodians of cricket to try and push that becomes an important factor. You know, I think it's really important that everyone supports the women's game as best they can. And that's not out of charity. I think it's out of the fact that I think it's a fantastic spectacle. We've seen that all around the world. So I would love it to be 4 teams, 5 teams, 6 teams. I think at the moment, there probably isn't the player depth to make that work and have it a product that is of the standard that I think it needs to be. But I know that's something that Cricket West Indies are working very hard on. So fingers crossed, the WCPL stands on its own. I don't think we're at that point yet, but certainly that's the ambition that all of us are working on it have. And we'd love to be in a position where it was as big, if not bigger, than the men's tournament.
One question about the men's tournament before I let Philo and Tony have a chance to ask you some questions. Over the you know last few seasons and looking at Cricket West Indies and also growing the game and getting new players into the West Indies team. One of the deficiencies of CPL has been seen to be development of young players and getting the succession plan going and getting the next generation of T20 World Cup winners and big franchise players. Right now, each team has a youth arm with a few players, but they don't really get to play that much. How do you see CPL helping to solve that problem? Do you ever foresee maybe a youth team, even though it may not be as strong, playing as a separate entity? Or do you think we need to have rules that determine how many, that maybe one youth player or two youth players should play in every side, or maybe increase what we have now? How do we solve this problem of injecting youth into the West Indies side?
I've got lots and lots of points there. That's a really big question, Doc, but I'll do my very best. One, I don't think it's necessarily true that CPL hasn't played its part in developing cricketers. You know, before the CPL happened, Rothman Powell was playing CCC cricket and was a surprise selection in the 2016 draft. And CPL has played a huge part in his development and his rise to the top of his game. We've seen Gudakesh Moti use the CPL as a springboard to his success. There's been lots and lots of players. You know, Akhil Hussain, I know he's approaching his late 20s now, but he was making his CPL debut. He was playing all the way back in 2014 as a young player and is just flying back to Trinidad from having played in the 100 final and been selected in tournaments all around the world. The other point I'd make is that there are developmental spots kicking around within the CPL. Each team has to have a minimum of 2 under 23 players that comes from a list selected by Cricket West Indies. Mm-hmm. And between them, they have to play 30 games across the season. So that's 30 guaranteed appearances for those young players. The last few years, it's massively exceeded that. I think, you know, you had someone like Ramon Simmons, who was selected in that spot in 2022 and became a first team player quite quickly and is, you know, very well thought of. I know he was injured last year, but hopefully he'll be back. I think last year there was 30 appearances that teams had to do and it topped out at 38. So there are opportunities for young players, but certainly there can be more. I know at the cricket conference that took place in Port of Spain last year, Cricket West Indies and Miles Bascombe were announcing that the plans was for us to have a developmental T20 tournament kicking off next year. For me, that's an important step. I think bridging that gap between having that gap between, there's already a gap between CPL and international cricket, but bridging that gap below, that's quite important. So hopefully that's a full answer. Like, it was a big question, but hopefully I've done my best to answer it.
Doc, You satisfied with the answer? Doc, are you satisfied?
Well, I am satisfied with the efforts and that CPL is doing. Don't get me wrong, because you've done something that Cricket West Indies has been unable to do without losing a lot more than maybe you have lost. The only thing I look at is let's say you look at the squad that was selected recently, you don't really see the breakthrough of youth into the squad. And of course, that's not CPL, it's the selectors, it's other things, but maybe it's that the perception of the youth that are being exposed aren't reaching the standard to play international cricket as yet. I know Rothman, let's say 8 years ago, became relevant and is now a player, but we can't look at the more recent successes. Yes, Ford is in the team now, but in order for us to really make that transition to another generation of winners, we really need more youth. So the question is it that we have to depend on the older players, like let's say a Johnson Charles and, you know, some of the others, Russell, or is it that we don't have younger players to replace them? So, I mean, I'm not trying to be negative about CPL, but I'm just looking at how we are developing, how we're transitioning, considering we haven't done well in the last few World Cups, that, you know, where are the new players coming from? That's the question.
Yeah, no, I think it's not necessarily fair to say that young players aren't being given an opportunity. I think that's not necessarily the case. You know, last year you had guys like McKennie Clark getting a go and doing quite well outside of those appearances, having been selected outside that. This year you've got guys like, say, Thorne, Nathan Healy. Junior Sinclair has been a breakthrough player and is still in that under-23 category for the Guyana Amazon Warriors. So I think there is young players. Whether or not they're being selected, and whether or not if they are selected, they're then making it through the team, I think you would need to have a much more relevant voice than someone like Darren Samory on the show to tell you whether or not he's selected, why he's not selecting those guys to play in the team. But I think there is youth kicking around. I don't think West Indies did badly at this T20 World Cup. They didn't win it, but they weren't terrible. I think, you know, they. I probably would give them a passing grade, I would say, for their performances there. And hopefully they do well in this series against South Africa. So fingers crossed those players continue to kick on. But I think, you know, there are a couple of guys every year that get a gig and perform and break through at CPL. But I don't disagree that there's a need for that tournament that sits underneath it in order for us to see more players succeeding. And hopefully in 2025, that is something that comes to fruition. I'd love to be able to be a part of it and help in any way I can to try and promote it.
Fiddle, what do you want to see from the CPL? What do you want to get from them?
Good evening, Andrew. Good evening to your guests. Good evening, obviously. Special greetings to Pete. Welcome back to the region. Good evening to my friend, Carlos and Heaven. But Pete, obviously, my interest is in the women's CPL. You've managed to attract some very big names. I'm grateful for that. And I hope that these professionals can come in and help the amateurs from the region obviously understand what it takes to play at that level. But how important is this women's CPL to the development of women's cricket in the Caribbean?
Mm-hmm. I think for me, the way you answer that question is by listening to the women's cricketers that I've been lucky enough to speak to. We had a launch event last night in Trinidad, and Shakira Selman, who obviously is a very experienced cricketer, was imploring her Caribbean fellow players to be using this opportunity. You know, there's people here from the IPL that are observing this tournament, and, you know, she was saying, you know, this is a chance for an Ashmini Munasar or a Jazara Claxton or any of these other fantastic young players to use it as a springboard and to look at the way players like Australians Jess Jonathan or English players Lauren Hill go about their game. And they tell me that it's hugely important and they ask for this tournament and they've got it. So, yeah, for me, that's massive, you know, just as it is for the young male players that have been exposed. You know, if you're a young player at St. Lucia Kings and you get exposed to Faf du Plessis, there probably isn't a better role model for you in terms of how you go about being committed to being a professional athlete.
Tony, what do you want from CPL?
Good evening, Andrew. You hearing me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Good evening, Andrew. Right. Good evening to the panel. Good evening to our listeners and viewers. Pete, one question. I think that CPL has done well to expose players. In addition to that, to improve the marketability of the different islands of the Caribbean, what can be done with the women's game in particular to market or profile the big name players that are coming? Because obviously the public will be more in tune with the men's game. What can be done to profile big names? Because a lot of people who are involved in cricket don't even know about the big names in women's cricket.
Yeah, so hugely important to us. Today we released the Hayley Matthews life story film. I don't know if you guys have seen that on our social media pages. I hope you watch it because I think it might be the best thing that CPL has ever made. Massive shout out to my colleague, Paul Pritchett-Brown, who's the one who pulled all of that together. Yeah, just a brilliant piece of filmmaking, telling a fantastic story. This week, I have organized for a women's player to be do a half an hour interview every single day on TV6 at 7:30 in the morning in Trinidad. We're trying very hard to push these guys forward. The Trinidad media were brilliant last night in coming out and supporting us for our event. You know, the three TV channels were there interviewing these cricketers. Sport's all about emotional connection, right? That's why we love it. And you have to be connected to the players. And in order for you to do that, you need to tell their stories. Now, we've only got these players for a relatively short period of time, but telling their stories is really, really important. And hopefully the Hayley Matthews piece is just the start of us in terms of doing that. The reason why, and hopefully you guys know this, having spent some time with me, why I absolutely love this part of the world, it just fills me with joy coming here because it's such an amazing place, is the stories that you hear from people. You know, the stories that they've gone through in terms of them becoming a professional athlete. So that's really important. You know, people need to have that emotional connection to these cricketers and get to know them. I'm hoping I'm doing my part in trying to tell those stories. That's what I've spent the last 3 months trying to do and trying to bang that drum. And hopefully your listeners will go and watch the Hayley Matthews documentary and listen to all of that and have an idea of her story. You know, obviously just a hugely impressive woman who's good at everything she does, somewhat frustratingly for those of us that aren't good at absolutely everything we do. But yeah, a great story nonetheless. But yeah, Tony, I 100% agree. It's so important that we're getting people to know these players. You know, it needs to be away from knowing Hayley Matthews, Deandra Dotton and Stefani Taylor. Women's cricket in this region is so much bigger than that. You know, we need to be talking about Karishma Ramharak. We need to be talking about how exciting it is to be seeing, you know, someone like 15, 16-year-old players like Samara Ramnath coming in and succeeding and getting them the exposure that they deserve. So for me, that is my only real job over the next couple of weeks. And hopefully I do these fantastic cricketers proud.
Mm-hmm. Doc, thank you. Any final questions for Petey before he goes? Any thing you want to say, fellow Doc?
Andrew. Okay, go ahead. Someone. Oh, we got someone.
Yeah.
It's Neil Barry here, Andrew.
Oh, Neil.
Let me apologize for my microphone cock-up, but I'm here. I'm here listening to all that Peter would have said, and I have one question for him.
Sure.
I understand, appreciate all that Peter would have said in terms of what the CPL wants to do, especially for women's cricket, right? But my question is, these cricketers come from a foundation, right? To be identified and then audition and get into the CPL. How can CPL use this clout with the West Indies Board and vis-a-vis the local board to ensure that the young cricketers, the young female cricketers at the grassroots level have an opportunity to play more cricket, right? Because, for example, in my own country here in Guyana, these women hardly play in the club and play against each other on a consistent basis, right? So one or two will bubble up to the top. Yes, it's natural. Their talent may make them become visible, right? But they're not getting enough groundwork so as more players can become more relevant and give the CPL more options. So my thing is, how can the CPL use its clout with the West Indies board and the local board to increase participation and playing time at the local level?
There's a couple of things we can do here, and I think we're trying to do. You know, obviously CPL is a commercial entity that sits outside of Cricket West Indies, but I still see it as very much part of the ecosystem. CPL is generating income for Cricket West Indies, which hopefully can then be used for the for those developmental projects through the license fee that it pays to the tournament. But there's a couple of other initiatives that I think are really important. We've just recently launched a health, fitness and wellbeing board. It's got four members on it, which is Dr. Akshay Mansingh, who's our longtime chief medical officer, Dr. Marianne Richards, who's the principal medical officer for the health board in Trinidad, and then white ball men's coach Darren Sammy, and then Hayley Matthews, who obviously is, we've already talked about. So they're advising us on the health fitness stuff, which is hopefully getting people moving and getting kids involved. We've just announced that just launched a really fun Hit for Six high intensity interval workout training video, which I need to be doing more of so I can try and get rid of some of this middle-aged spread that's spreading rapidly. But that's one thing, you know, get people fit, get people moving. The other thing is our franchises are doing a great job with this stuff, you know, and I think they don't get enough credit. The St. Lucia Kings have a memorandum of understanding with the High Performance Center in St. Lucia. They've donated nets, they've donated covers, they've, you know, sent along master classes, they've sent St. Lucia cricket coaches out to the IPL for them to learn and grow and improve and all that kind of stuff. And then the Barbados Royals have started the Barbados Royals Girls Cricket Club with Hayley as their figurehead, that are getting more and more girls involved in the game. So I think we need to try and find a way for our young women and girls across the world to feel that sport's an option for them, and find a way to try and stop that drop off when they get to a certain age, which is a big problem for girls' sport, and then find a way for them to be inspired. So CPL's remit is slightly different from that of Cricket West Indies, and I think they're doing a very decent job in terms of getting girls involved. But it's really pleasing to see that our franchises are getting involved in that youth development side of the game. And I'm hopeful that continues. But yeah, really excited about the Barbados Girls Cricket Club. If there's any young girls or female cricketers in Barbados that are interested in taking up the game, check that out. If there's any parents of young girls that want to get their kids involved, please do go along and get involved. I think if you can fall in love with cricket, you're in love with something for the rest of your life, right, boys? Mm-hmm. And it would be nice to see as many people as possible doing that. Sometimes it makes you happy, sometimes it makes you sad, but it's always there for you.
Mm-hmm. Neil? You happy with that answer?
Well, listen, there is a program there in place, right? And, of course, we know that, you know, not everyone listens to Peter and to the CPL. Mm. Each island have their own, and country have their own way of going about things. I would do hope, you know, that we can have some sort of collectiveness and goal congruence where we can all look at what is available. Because, obviously, there are things available that we can all use at the various islands and in this country, Guyana, to make our cricket better. That's the goal. That should be the goal of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you made a really good point. I think there's probably more we can do. You know, I think maybe we need to be looking at speaking to the local boards and saying, you know, look, these are the areas that you can go to if you're interested in getting involved, whether you're a young boy or a young girl, you know, in terms of cricket. Maybe we can be using our platform to be trying to point people in those directions. We tried really hard. You know, we've done lots of initiatives for young kids. I mean, we gave away thousands and thousands of tickets to CPL games last year for young people to come along, watch free. Any business needs to future-proof itself. And kids that are falling in love with cricket today are the people who are going to be buying tickets in the future for them and their kids, and coming along and watching on TV and engaging in all of our channels. So, yeah, I don't want to get sounding a little bit too cliche there, gents. I almost started singing Children of the Future at that point, right? And none of us want to be listening to that. But, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Peter. I know you've got some work to do. We'll try and have you on again soon. And we wish CPL well.
Thanks, guys. I'll be listening in to the rest of the show while I carry on with my emails.
Okay, wonderful. All right. So there you have it. Peter Miller from CPL. Let's pause for a business cause. When we come back, we want to go to Neil Barry and, of course, Philo Wallace and Tony Greer for the assessment of the test match that was played recently, South Africa versus the West Indies in Guyana. Mason and Guest brought to an association with our good friends at ASAP. We work around the best shot of the day.
ASAP, white rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ASAP is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ASAP. is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, now let's go to Neil Barry, who did commentaries in the match. Neil, your assessment of the test match of the West Indies loss to South Africa, it was a tight one.
Well, I don't understand what you mean by tight, Andrew, because to me it was a pretty easy test match. It was a good test match, but I wouldn't say tight.
Okay.
I'm not going to fall into that trap. I think it's a case where, you know, the West Indies, true to form, especially our batsmen, have shown that they cannot dedicate and commit themselves to a long, hard battle and fight. And that's not their failure. That's our system's failure, right? I mean, South Africa scoring, you know, 106 in the first innings is not a huge score. West Indies started to bat on that first day, right? And couldn't capitalize on that, being bowled out for 140-odd, okay? 144, and then South Africa, of course, being 246. From the bowling department, the West Indies, I think, have done well. You know, you've got fast bowlers who have picked up 5 wickets all in each innings, and you had good support to restrict South Africa, who's batting, you know, from a world positioning point of view, is not the strongest, but it's still a good enough batting lineup, I think, to score over 200 runs. The pitch was okay, right? It's a test match pitch, not too many variable bunks. Was evident, yes, there's some balls that kept low, but listen, this is test cricket. The pitches and those things are supposed to happen, and batsmen and bowlers are supposed to respond to the challenges that they face. Right, chasing 2-6 in the second innings with so much time left, right, was the hard part, really, in truly for West Indian batsmen, because they just could not apply themselves over a long period of time. They just didn't understand how to score runs, right, without taking unnecessary risks. Right, knowing what balls to leave and what to score up and how to dictate, you know, to the bowlers a little bit. They allow the bowlers to bowl too many times, you know, too many deliveries to them, especially the spin bowlers down at the bottom, right? And the fast bowlers were allowed. Yes, they were getting some lateral movements, right? But if the batting technique was better, where they could have gotten behind the line, picked up the line early and got closer to the ball, they could have picked up singles and rotated the strike. So those basic things, which you basically learn from playing in your club cricket, right, was not evident. And that has been the case of West Indies over a prolonged period of time. I am not surprised that they were bowled out under the score for 222, right? But, you know, you keep hoping and hoping and hoping, but we have got to fix the issues at the bottom of our cricket, where these guys come from, so they can be better at the top level.
Interesting.
So it wasn't a tight test. I think South Africa played well, responded to the challenge better, and were the deserved winners.
Okay, well, a little bit later on, I want to come back to you. You talk about the deficiencies of some of our batsmen. Of course, Louis and Craig Bathick is struggling at the knees. And we're going to certainly take a look at that. But let's go now to Tony Gray. Tony, your assessment of the test match.
Yeah, listen, first of all, I have to say that I was very disappointed that we couldn't beat South Africa. And the fact is that we talk a lot about concentration, but we also have to talk about technique. The technique of our batsmen, we are not adept at facing fast bowlers, especially fast bowlers that move the ball laterally, and spin bowlers that turn the ball, because our batsmen don't really use their feet laterally to the crease or towards the spin bowlers. And we saw it again and again. I mean, our fast bowlers did exceptionally well. You know, this young Jaden Seals have done well because of the fact that what preceded England, he worked very hard at his fitness level. He obviously went across to England to play some county cricket, and it helped greatly. And he was able to transfer a lot of the skill that he learned in those games into the test match against England and subsequently against South Africa. He was brilliant in this game. So young Sharma Joseph, it's good to see him back taking wickets. And obviously, we have to understand what preceded the success of this young man in Australia, first of all. I think that what he did in South Africa made the transition easy to Australia. And now he's come back into prominence because he's bowling the lengths that we want to see. The pitch in that Guyana test match was a pitch that helped the faster bowlers with seam movement. And if that's the case, all the faster bowlers on that particular game bowled well because they kept their wrist behind the ball. They hit the seam a lot. And we know that our batsmen are not good at the deliveries that move laterally. And we are found wanting again with technique. If our batsmen don't have the basic technique, their confidence level will drop and their concentration levels will drop. So the main thing is about technique, picking up the line, as Neil rightly said, the original line, and adjusting from there. But you cannot discount the efforts of the bowlers, particularly the faster bowlers. Rabada going towards 300 wickets, extra motivation, bowl well. But in the first innings of the South Africans, remember that 60-run or 63-run partnership, yep, last wicket partnership, mm-hmm, created some momentum for them. And we didn't talk about that enough because, again, we've seen concentration being the problem, because we go into a relaxed state when things are going well, expecting the South Africans to capitulate. But that didn't happen. That 63-run partnership in the first innings, in the context of the game, with a huge partnership, not only because they got 63 runs, but they seized the momentum of the game. And we have to look at these little parts of the game before we could improve. So South Africa, based on their batting, deserved to win the game because they were a lot more committed and concentrated better on a pitch that didn't have any devils at all. Mm-hmm. And just to mention something, Jason Holder showed unequivocally how to bat on a surface in the first innings, getting 54 not out, using his physical size, coming out to combat the movement of the ball. And he batted brilliantly in the first innings, not so much in the second innings. So again, we lost a test match, in my opinion, that we should have won.
Phil, your assessment?
Andrew?
Yes,
a couple of weeks ago, we heard the head coach say saying that we competed in England.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if we're competing to win or we're competing to lose.
Mm.
Because you can compete, but it's how you're competing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see any devils in the pitch in Ghana. I don't think it was a close test match. We lost a test match in 3 days again.
Yep, yep.
So I think that's how far Africa outplayed us.
Mm-hmm.
We had a team dying down for 90. Any thinking captain would say we'll bowl them out for 100.
Mm-hmm. That is not.
But when you let people get out of jail, it is hard to get them back in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And our batting continues to be problematic. Our batting coach looks very worried.
Mm-hmm.
And we just see problems, the same problems that we left in England, the same problems in Antigua, in Guyana, and Trinidad. The ball was not swinging as much in Guyana, but we still struggle. Because our batters don't understand what it means to move your back foot back and across. They don't understand it. And I think there's something that it needs to be drilled into them. I know there might be a little tick in their heads, but there's a basic movement that you have to move in, to get close to a cricket ball. Dr. Ford was a weightlifter. There's a certain way in which you go lift weights. If you lift weights the wrong way, you can hurt muscles and stuff like that. If you want to score runs in test match cricket, you have to have the basic movement for back to right, and that is our problem. Our batsmen don't move to the don't get themselves in position to play the balls, and if there's any hint of movement, we are out. So we are struggling with our batters to understand batting. We had 3 days to score 200 and something runs, and we just don't know how to approach it. So we again, it comes down to the batting. The bowlers look good. I commend Jaden Seal. Because I think that Jaden Seal has understand what is required at that level. He had a successful stint with Sussex, and I hope that Sussex re-sign him for next summer, because he has used the opportunity to play for Sussex, and he has brought it into test match cricket. He also went away from Sussex after a while to get some personal training, and it worked. And we can see his speeds up. We can see him thinking. We can see him fitter,
right,
stronger, and happier. And I think that is a plus. Shamar Joseph, we realize that he needs to play cricket. Because the more cricket he plays, the better he's going to get, the better he understands. And he has the ability, as I said before, to hit a six. So he's a three-dimensional player for us. He bowls quickly, he can field, and he can bat.
Mm-hmm.
But these are three skills that we need to harness and keep him on a nice, even keel. So when you look at Warwick and Kamin, Yogbon Moti in the first game. Looked good in the second. Moti came into his own with the bat as well. So there's some little positives from that. But the need, Andrew Stakes need to be collective. We're not batting as a collective. We're not playing cricket as a collective. And I find that's where we're falling down. I can remember playing cricket. You get tail enders and you get your fast bowlers to running hard and give it their all to dismiss them.
Yep.
As you rightly said, we come off the accelerator and we feel like the guys are going to give away the highs. One thing I realized about the South Africans is that when I saw Rabada looking to bat, Rabada was looking to score runs. And normally you would see Rabada looking to play some funny shots, but he did not. So he worked out that he can his contribution of 15 or 20 is going to make the difference in the end. And these are things that our players need to understand. Again, we've lost the test series. We're ninth in the standing.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a couple more test matches to go. So I hope that whatever is being done at Cricket West Indies to these test cricketers now, that we see a better something better going into the last. I see Bangladesh for two and Pakistan for two test matches. Hope we can see better performances. Because you cannot continue to keep losing and tell me you're learning.
Mm-hmm.
You lose to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're learning to lose, something wrong. And we need to look at our... Craig also needs to look at himself as well as captain and his batting.
Ooh.
There's something that he is doing fundamentally wrong. Yeah, there's something. You cannot tell me, Andrew, playing 94 test matches and you're still struggling to put together innings after 94 test matches. That should not be happening to Craig Buffett.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something that he's not been going for a little while that he needs to get back to. And hopefully against Bangladesh, we can see a Craig Bradford resurgence, because clearly, Andrew, the batting is centered around him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Clearly. Let me ask you something. Can I ask him something?
Sure, of course.
Recently, we played three test matches in England. The first test match at Lord's, your captain didn't look good at all because I think his mindset was negative. In the second test match, he got 240s, 240 somethings, right? Because he was going faster, he was scoring faster. His mindset was to go out there and, score runs. Mm-hmm. He was not defensive. Mm-hmm. See, when your mindset improves, your technique can improve in him because you're moving with a little bit more purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But when he goes out there with a defensive mindset, he does not score runs at all because he creates more and more. We know he has some technical issues, not any back foot movement at all. He was dependent in the early parts of his career on his concentration levels and the ability to nudge the ball around. But remember, with the advancement in technology, the opposing sides would have understood his weaknesses. Mm-hmm. So once he moves faster now, he has better positioning when playing the ball. But that has to be coming from his mindset of looking to score runs rather than defend.
Tony, I got a question for you. I'm going to come back to Philo and Dr. Ford. Craig Buffett, do you think he should be under the microscope in relation to continuing to captain the side? Would you look around, Tony?
Well, when you talk about captaincy of the West Indies team, we haven't prepared players properly to lead, especially in this tumultuous time that we are seeing our team fail. Mm. So there's no real person or wrong that will take over this moment. Oh. All these young players that we have, some experienced players too, but not ready for captaincy. I would leave him for at least some more series.
So,
two more series.
So you're saying on
Mason... Hopefully he can improve.
So you're saying on Mason and Guest tonight that you will continue with Buffett as captain. Is that what you're saying, Tony?
Well, the thing about it is, Buffett is not the main problem, Andrew.
I know.
You're looking to blame the...
Not at all.
Not the main problem, Andrew.
No. I asked. No, he's the captain of the side. A critical role that he's playing, I'm asking you. Having lost a test series.
I would...
Continue, Tony.
I would leave him for a couple more series because he's not the main issue.
Okay.
Right? The main issue is the ineptness of our batsmen.
So he's part of the problem then, or is he not?
No, well, he has to improve his own
game
ability as a batsman, especially a batsman. But
right.
The main issue is the ineptness of our batsmen and the fact that we don't concentrate long enough in all aspects of the game. Sometimes we have a team to beat and we relax. So we have to look at that.
We can't beat them. Okay, we're going to pause for business call. When we come back, we're going to get the view of Dr. Ford and Philo. And it's going to be interesting to hear what Neil Berry has got to say about the techniques of some of these players. Mikel Louis, he needs some help. Mason and Guest Broadden Association with our good friends at ASF. We work on the best shot of the day.
ASF, white rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 da, pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, Doc, let's come to you. Your assessment of the test match, and would you keep Brathwaite as captain?
Okay. Well, Andrew, the series has gone almost the same way as it has for the last 30 years or so.
30.
And, you know, the 10th series. Basically, we just don't bat well enough to be competitive. When you look at the stats as an aggregate, Jason scored maybe 30 per innings and everyone else was 20 plus or less. So you can't really have a test team scoring so low and doing well. And as I said, Jason at six exposes a side that's weak in batting to too short a batting lineup and a tail. So that plagued us throughout. Yes, I know that we bowled out South Africa for just 160 and then we fell short. And once they made 240 plus, that was a bridge too far for us. One of the highlights, really, one of the good things about the batting was Casey Carty looked totally assured until he got himself out on most occasions. His defense looked sound, and I think he's a guy for the future. Louis has some issues outside the off stump and some technical things to work on, and I think he needs some more seasons to get himself in shape. Yes, the captain had a poor series, just aggregate over 60. He didn't look very confident at all. And Hodge and Athanase had one good score. Nothing else after. When we look at the brain trust and how we picked the team too, considering the batting was so short, I don't think the brain trust realized that the pitch in Ghana was different to the pitch they played on in Trinidad, because you saw South Africa with one good spinner and we continued with two spinners on a pitch that was giving assistance to fast bowlers, which showed that we just misjudged the pitch completely because you know, you saw Warrington getting 8 wickets and the other wicket takers was Joseph in his one match and Seals, who is the out and out spearhead of the West Indian attack. Now it's been proven, it's been shown. These two series show that Seals has emerged as our best bowler. So considering our deficiencies in batting, to pick two spinners was a big error, I think, by the brain trust and must be accepted as an error, because we could have had another fast bowler or an all-rounder or a batsman. I think that was a wasted spot that we had there. But, you know, the guys...
So hold on, Doc. So you not have played Moti?
No, I wouldn't have played Moti now, seeing how the pitch was. If we knew... You know, the history has shown that lots of fast bowlers have done well there.
Yes.
I think we would know the history better than the opposition.
We should.
And, you know, the fact that they went one spinner and we saw the way the match played out, obviously we didn't understand the pitch, and this is we're in home conditions, so we should understand the pitch, the pitch better. So we would have done better with even another fast bowler or even a batsman or an all-rounder. We did have options, and you saw that we were unable to use the two spinners efficiently. The captain went with Warrington because he was in better form, and Moti was underused. Yes, Moti made some runs, but really and truly, that should have been maybe the role of another batsman. And batting is our Achilles heel, because when you look at it, we really lost the matches. We didn't bat well. And coming down to the end, when we had lots of time, as Philo said, we didn't bat like we realized we had the time. And you look at the dismissals in the first innings, you know, lots of guys got caught in the slip, lunging at balls and driving and falling over. And, you know, we had enough time to wait until the bowlers bowled the ball in the areas we wanted. Right. And we could have got the runs in any different ways. Singles, putting away the bad ball. We had the time to really be patient. And we showed lots of impatience in the batting. So the batting is is our Achilles heel that we have to really work on. It's concentration, it's technique. There's so many different areas. It's fitness. I don't know. Philo said the batting coach looked worried, but we've been having batting problems for a very long time. Mm. So as far as the captain, did the captain lose us the series? I don't think he did. Does he bat well enough? I'd say no, because when I see Carty and the captain batting together, I feel more comfortable watching Carty bat than watching the captain bat. Mm. And I think that simple eye test tells me that I do have concerns about the captain, his stickability, the ability of him to survive. Mm. I feel, as Bajan would say, afraid for him when he's batting. Mm. I don't feel like he's ever on top. He's never dominant. And I think that after so many tests, he has to show me a bit more. And I think Carty, with a little bit of greater batting intelligence and better decision making, can be a guy that I can feel comfortable with and seeing him close to the top of the order.
Doc, I'm asking the question, would you continue with Brathwaite as captain? Is he your captain for the next series?
Brathwaite being captain or not isn't going to change our fortunes. Okay. We need six batsmen.
Okay. So
and Jason Bahin at seven.
Okay. So you're not going to change the captain then? I need to know that.
Well, the captain is still our better opener. So the thing is, can the captain command a place? He can.
Yes.
I don't think Cricket West Indies will go back. Jason, does Jason want to be captain? When you think about it, there's
nobody
other person in the team that can qualify as captain.
Do we have a crisis of leadership?
Hmm?
Do we have a crisis in the relation to leadership?
When the team performs as badly as we do, we do embarrass any leader that we have. So in that context, anyone who's a leader would look like they're in crisis. But I must admit that some of the mouthings and the articulations of the captain left a lot to be desired. I think they were unrealistic in many situations, you know, saying that we could have won a match, that we were actually saved by rain in the first inning. and then continuing to say that you know, we have to like concentrate and believe. We have fundamental problems. I think I think that he could have been more candid with that, because it was laid bare in the two matches. So I would like that the comments be more realistic. Mm-hmm. I like that he'd be more assured in his batting. I like that he just make more runs and lead from the front. But I can't say that, you know, the last wicket pair putting on 60, that's happened to us for decades. The tail always gives the West Indies trouble. We've seen it over and over and over. So this is the lack of having like a Rabada to call back or somebody to call back to just bowl a Yorker and clean up the tails middle stump. You know, we need an enforcer, and that's, I'm sure that our attack is good enough that we can get that. But one of the interesting things we look at is, you know, we had an attack and we felt good about it. We had a spinner too many. Roach didn't play. Joseph is to come back. So the thing is, can Roach really fit into this construct of a bowling attack? Not to say that he doesn't have more in the tank, but looking at the way things are,
it looks as if he's in
looking
trouble.
At Joseph versus Roach, you know, the question is, which one do you want? So I think that there's a lot of competition there, positions, and time will tell how that will turn.
Philo, would you continue with Brathwaite as captain?
It's a very good question, Andrew. When you look at the way how Craig has been leading the side, one would think that he's missing the attacking crew. Because I believe that sometimes during the test series that he had the teams to squeeze and he didn't squeeze them. And I find that he releases pressure when he should be actually applying pressure. So he's not reading the game as well as he should. The vice captain is Joshua De Silva. Can he command his position as captain outside? Can you put the responsibility of him captain at test match? Say that sometimes he gets too heavy with his feet and all kind of stuff, and that he doesn't score consistently. These are ingredients for you for captaincy. Craig right now is at the stage where he has to take us through this turbulent time. He has to make up in his mind to do things the way he believes that can benefit West Indies cricket and himself. And make decisions on the field and not in the dressing room. He has to be more assertive when he's in the field as a captain. He has to be more assertive when he's batting. And I believe that if he can get the combination right, we can he can start winning test matches. He's lost a few series now.
Yep,
so he must be disappointed.
I would think so. Neil?
And he said that he loves captain. He loves to be captain. So it is up to Craig Braffitt.
Mm-hmm.
Although he rebounds in the winter tours, that will see him going to 2025 of our leader. If he doesn't do well in those four test matches, two against Bangladesh and the two against Pakistan, he can well be seeing the writing on the door, because I don't think Michael Westin is going to put up with a captain who's struggling with the bat and not winning test series.
Okay. Neil, would you...
That is a difficulty. You need to win test series in order to keep your job.
I agree. Neil, would you continue with Bathurst as captain? Neil?
Andrew Mason, the issue is not your captain, mate.
Okay.
Andrew, you see, you're asking for easy answers.
No!
You're asking for a simple answer, yes or no, on Braffitt. But who are you going to replace Braffitt with? Who is there that can take the West Indies through? Are you going to be a captain from outside the squad? If Jason is going to take the team back, then yes, fine. Tell Braffitt goodbye. Right? But apart from Jason, you cannot tell me you're going to give the silver to the team. Come on now. Right? What experience as a captain and as a leader?
Right,
if you're captaining a team,
right,
you need to know, you know, have the confidence of your players, you have the confidence in yourself. You need to understand the game to a point where you know when to press, when to ease. All of your guests have said the same thing, right? There are opportunities that went to begging that Braffitt did not seize upon. That's fine. But who among the men in the squad or in local cricket who can go up there and do something different? Are we being preparing leaders in our developmental process, right? Everybody in the team there on your panel knows that. We have not been preparing leaders. We have not been looking and assessing and doing enough critical thinking work with our young cricketers to bring them up as leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yes. What is team that if you just pick the best batter or the best bowler for the longest while and say, look, you be captain. Mm-hmm. We're not thinking it through.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have a crisis of leadership. That's true.
That's a big thing. So then, Neil, you will stay with Braffitt. Just want to make a note. I just making a note. So you would stay with Braffitt.
You'd have to stay with Braffitt and give him the necessary support, right? But he needs a stern talking to. It is clear that he needs maybe someone like Pillow to say to him, look, you need to be positive. You need to be your own man. You need to make your decisions out there on the field of play. All the analysts who will analyze his performance after the event and all the coaches who will do it before and tell him what should happen are not out there with him, right? Being a captain means you've got to be prepared to take stern decisions and to back your own intuitions as the game progresses. Right? Also, did he have enough practice in the local levels in terms of carrying out those things that we were just talking about? Of going in for the kill, of setting the right feel, of applying the pressure the right time? Does he have the confidence in the weapons that he has to say, okay, I can do this and get X, Y, Z results? Those are all, you know, things you've got to throw into the pot and then come up with analysis on whether or not you're going to change Braffitt and whether or not the person replaced him can do different.
Fair enough.
Well, Neil, let me ask you a question. Let me ask Neil a question, Andrew.
Sure.
What is the function of the vice captain? Because a lot of times, and I brought it up years ago in my level 2 coaching course at the Queen's Park Oval, because when we had great captains, we had great vice captains. And because the vice captains have to strike the balance when the captain is deficient in certain areas, because a lot of captains lead by personality. Braffitt is not an introvert, but he's not an extrovert. And he cannot seem to come out of that sort of slight introverted approach to things. Because sometimes you have to be stern out there. And, you know, I have always said the best leaders, best captains are the ones who act out of their personalities and their comfort zone. So my point is, what is the role of the vice captain as it relates to helping situations on the field if the captain's personality is a bit quiet?
Neil?
Tony, what experience does the vice captain have at captaining anything? That's and you're Trinidad, you're there with him. Did he captain at his school? Did he captain at his club? How many times did this young man lead a team between the age of 10 to 20? Can you answer that?
Well, I think he's captain his zone, is on the 19 zone, but that's about it.
You see, so therefore, he doesn't. So you answer your own question. right? The vice captain does not have, and Ito is okay. He may not be introverted, but I don't think he's extrovert either.
So he has a role to play. What is the vice captain's role? Why you pick him as vice captain? What is the role that he has to play? It doesn't matter if he knows. Does he know his role? He has to challenge the captain sometimes on the field. To ask questions. Why are you doing this? Come on, let's do this and challenge the captain.
I agree with you, Tony. I do not think that he understands his role. I do not think we have done a good job. And I said we, I mean Cricket West Indies, right? And the territories in terms of developing the confidence of players in critical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
We have not done a good job at that. So when someone challenges the captain, you know, the captain feels, okay, he wants my job, I'll get rid of him.
Oh.
The captain don't see it as a challenge. Is that okay, this can make me better, and this is good volume information coming. Tony, you played, Philo played as well, and I know you guys out there in first class cricket, right, with the few times I played against y'all, would have been in your captain face giving instructions and making your suggestions, and very forcibly as well.
Indeed.
And no hard feelings was done at the end of the day.
No, Yes, fellow.
When I played for Barbados, there were a number of club captains in that Barbados squad. So the Barbados captain would always have other captains to go to, or they would come to him and say, well, look, we don't think this is going well. We need to try this. But when you look at the West Indies setup, a lot of those players are not even captains of their franchises in the four-day cricket. They're just normal players. I'm not even certain if Hodge is vice captain of the Windwards. I don't know if Alec Antunes is the vice captain of the Windwards. We don't know. We don't know if Joshua De Silva is the vice captain of Trinidad and Tobago. So we're giving players this position of vice captain, because when I sat on that committee, I asked, what is the role of a vice captain? Is he just a vice captain because he had a title? But this is a guy that he can go and say, listen, I don't think XYZ is happening right. I even wanted the vice captain to be part of the selection panel to sit in meetings, so he can get a feel of being part of that side. That when he goes on that field, he knows what the captain's thinking. Sometimes you look at all the city team and the vice captain, he just catches the ball and goes to the next end.
But
we know discussions.
Yeah, I agree with you. And Joshua De Silva, I now remember captain the four-day team this year. But the point is that we have to educate our captains. I remember going to a workshop with Mike Brelly at the Queen's Park Oval, and somebody asked him about Ian Botham, how do you handle Ian Botham's personality? And he was a clinical psychologist. We had to understand what creates leadership, you know. And Philo, you make a good point that years ago, we used to sit down around senior players, but the captains in regional cricket, because of the low standard, are not really challenged to be tactically sound, you know. They understand how to have, that understanding of personality, because Craig Braffett's personality is one that is accommodating to other personalities. So that is a plus for him as a leader. But what about being challenged tactically on the field? I don't think that they get enough challenges in regional cricket. So they can't grow that way. Mm-hmm. It's like our batsmen, we talk about technique. But coaches are coaching the proper technique, or do they have the pitches that challenge them to improve their technique? Is it the same thing like leadership?
4341790. Let's take a call. Ken Osmond is in the chair. He was in yellow last week. No, he's in red. This is a very dominant color. It's got political implications, my friend. He's in red.
This is your color. This is your color. Fellow, how are you, man?
I don't know. Ken, I'm very well. And Andrew's wearing blue.
Yeah. Indeed. Yes, indeed. In anticipation of this weekend.
Let's take a call, man.
Hello, welcome, Mr. and guest. 719
in the country. Good night, Mr. Mason.
Good night to you.
Listen, we were talking about captains from the time Richie Richardson took over captaincy. We had the Brian Lawrence and all them. You were still talking about who went captain. I don't believe in that, who went captain. If Braffett decides to retire tomorrow, we're not going to have a captain?
True.
The West Indies dropped Braffett from vice captain to say a control on batting, and then turn around and give him captaincy. When we change captain, the West Indies, like when we change the president, we still have the same core of players. and we were getting beat. Well, last season, a series against South Africa. We were getting beat even when we had good players.
Mm-hmm.
I believe what happened is that these youngsters, they are not concentrating hard enough. But if you're going to test cricket, averaging 25, right. How much you going to average when you get there?
I agree.
It is the system. And that's great with you. You're telling the talk, you need fast wickets. We don't need no fast wickets to produce fast bowlers. I'm saying to you, it's a mindset. Roy Frederick was a hooker and a cutter, and Guyana, Bayshaw was a porker.
Mm-hmm.
It is how you build up your mind. Redpath was a ducker and a trotter, and Chapel and Stockport, and there were hookers in the Kill Point Sand Wicket. It is your personality, mm-hmm. how you build, that you play what you're playing. I don't care who we pick as West Indies captain. As long as you got these sort of players that you can't get more to score big runs,
mm-hmm.
we're going to get beat. Oh. It has nothing to do with captain. I hate to hear when people say, who going captain?
So it doesn't matter.
Then, if Bradford done tomorrow, somebody got captain. Yeah. Okay, good night.
Good. All right, let's try and sneak a couple of calls in. Kaiso, we want to hear from you pretty soon in relation to... What's happened there, Ken?
Something gone wrong.
Something's gone wrong. Something's happened. Okay, let's take a call. Hello, welcome, Mr. and guest.
Yeah, good night, Andrew.
Good night to you.
Good night to the panel.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell Dr. Ford again, I want to do a short poem. I'm going to do a poem being the West Indies new coach.
Okay.
I hear Dr. Ford pen is drying out.
Okay, go ahead with your poem.
Yeah, but my first question to Philo and the panel, how are we going to collect, name two wonders as West Indies captain, and I expect me to do good? Bob Jason, who are the Craig Wright play for wonders?
Oh, my God.
They're always wondering. So our cricket is not going to go anywhere.
Oh, interesting.
But anyhow, I'm going to do the poem now.
Yeah, quickly.
Yeah. I wanted to be the new West Indies coach. I'm going to come with a completely different approach. I'm going to bring back the softball so they can learn to play the bouncing ball. They could square cut and hook. I'm going to take them to dancing lessons so when they come up against the spin, they can use their foot. And I'm going to bring a psychologist into the game so at critical stages they could use their brain. And you will see all West Indies cricket come out of the drain, Andrew.
Thank you very much for your contribution. Well said. I think Dr. Ford will give you maybe 4 to 10 for that. Let's take another call. Hello, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mason.
Good afternoon to you, sir.
You, Mr. Mason, I want to ask you a question. I want to put you up on the spot now.
Would you
take the captaincy from Rabbit?
No, I wouldn't, because I don't think we have anyone else.
All right.
We've got a crisis, really, of leadership.
Yeah.
Does it matter?
It really don't. But you know, you just come in this thing. You know, the technique, the captain, Jason Holder. And for you know, from the time the captain, the technique, Jason Holder, with the team that he had, you know, be cricket, we're back down the hill, and the gentleman that bring them when he come, and he say, get rid of the whole crew that wrong. And you know, we the great worker, and we do that damage to the team.
Yeah.
And you know, from then we slip and slide and go on with Venice.
All right, I got.
You got to deal with the management.
The management.
You're always here at the head bad, the full body bad.
Right. All right. Thanks for your contribution. What we gonna do? We'll just hold the calls because Neil Barry is gonna leave. You know, he's a big guy, big top of the line guy in Guyana, you know, making lots of money. So we're not going to keep Neil too much longer. But Neil, I just want to ask this question. You saw Michael Louis. What is he doing wrong technically in your view? Louis.
Well, Andrew, when you look at the fact that, look at Louis' dismissals throughout. He's been either caught in the slips or caught behind, or there's a gap, he gets bowled. You look at his footwork, and Tony talk about that. People talk about not moving back and across, and a number of the young experts would say, oh, you don't need to do that in cricket because you can plant your foot and hit 60 in T20. But sorry, you know, cricket never changed despite what it is. But Louis obviously have a flaw. He doesn't get his front shoulder in the line of the ball. I mean, you know, and he doesn't move back in the course and pick up the early line. So after that, he plants his front foot, and after that, it's just hands alone.
Oh.
But his coaches, and he himself must understand that, but look at all the many, you know, analysis that's available. Go to the team analysts and look at the videos, and then go and work on it. So he needs to work on his do a lot of work on his foot movements, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about that. Mm-hmm. He's caught in the front foot. He's chopped a lot of times on the crease, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Not really getting a full committed stride forward.
Oh, dear.
So if the ball is going to move, as was in Guyana, you know, he's in trouble.
He's in trouble. Just before you go, what about Brath? I mean, he's been around for such a long time. Why is Brath still having these problems in your view? Craig Brathwaite, technically.
One of the things may be confidence. Can you recall when they had the pink ball first class game in Guyana versus Barbados a few years ago?
Yes.
And I did some commentary.
Yes, I remember that game.
In about, you know, five sessions, right? Craig Brathwaite came out in the second innings and looked different. He looked more busy. He got more aggressive. And he was actually getting a decent stride forward to counter the moving ball.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But from the very next innings, he went back to that old dogged way of being stuck on the crease and looking to just use his hands.
Mm.
Now, as he gets older, his eyes is going to deceive him, right? His concentration is not going to win. And as we all know, the players these days are very technical, your opponents. They study you. They know where your weaknesses are. They practice to get balls into those areas. And by and large, that's what they've been doing against him. So even if he gets to 20 or 30, he's not going to really push on that much now because they're going to... One ball is going to defeat that prod. He's not getting forward. He's not getting back. So he's really struggling.
He is. Neil, thanks very much for coming.
So he's got to work on that. He's played a number of test matches.
Yeah. All right, Neil. Thanks very much. We know you're
going to... Thanks, Andy.
All the best.
Thanks for having me. Thanks to my good friend, Philo. Good to see you. And Tony as well, and Dr. Ford.
Yes.
Thanks for being part of your panel. And call again next time. I'll try to create more space.
Thank you very much indeed.
Bye-bye, bye-bye.
No, just before we go back to the phones, Anthony Gray, we're going to go to Kaiso. Kaiso, in terms of South Africa, yes, they won the series, but are there any concerns coming out of the series that they won? Any concerns?
The issue with short series is, especially when there's only four innings, is that it's difficult to make long-term decisions. One would feel that with the following Bangladesh series, longer-term decisions will be made because, for example, you can't make a decision over a Ryan Rickelton because only batted once in the series. If he was to be paired up with the Calvarena came recently be good. I mean, this test match, so... David Bellingham probably didn't come off in the way that we hoped he would in the second test. So I think it's more so will at some point will Shukri Conrad finally find a nucleus of a team, because one of the challenges that Shukri has, there is always a change here, a change there. You wouldn't be able to say what is the nucleus of the South African team. You know that for a fact that Aiden Markram is a sure pick. Tony DeZorzi is still establishing himself as an opener. You know that Tim Buffum is a sure pick, but the one thing we can say without any without any debate is that Tristan Stubbs is definitely not a test match number three. All four of his dismissals outside off stump point to the infallibility of not knowing where his off stump is. And I think I'd love for someone at Philo to further explain on the technicalities of a test match number three in particular, needing to know where his off stump is, because it's always chasing wide ones. I think I remember it was one of the Jaden Sayles' dismissals where a number three, a batter who's trained at number three, having played at number three at first class level, knows that if the ball is outside off stump and your front pad is on off stump, that ball is not going to jag back. It is probably going to hold its line, move partially away or partially in. He chased that a wide one, and I actually made a comment to a colleague that that's not the kind of shot that test match number three plays, because you are in. He had faced about 60-something, more than 50 balls. It's at a point in his innings where he should have known that he was in, would have had a fair idea of what Jaden Sayles' lines and lengths are. So I think the decision around Tristan Stubbs at number three needs to be rethought, and rethought very quickly, because as much as you want an attacking number three, South Africa's pitch conditions, as challenging as they are, require a batter who's going to be able to see out testing spells with a watertight technique and then be able to transfer that pressure into counterattack. The pressure transference is something that Tristan Stubbs is good at. However, though, in test match cricket, there are no let-ups. I mean, one of the things that impressed me about the West Indies in that second test is that there weren't any let-ups from either end, whether it was spin, whether it was pace. So I think those four innings across Trinidad, across Guyana, gave me the fairest indication that South Africa are going to have to go looking for another number three. There is one in the form of Keegan Peterson, who has lesser issues outside of Stambio. Remember him from his debut season back in 2021. Mm-hmm. However, though, he does not quite form part of the kind of attacking cricket that Shukri Conrad is looking to play. But the one thing we can say, without any consideration, is that Tristan Stubbs is not a test match number three. And even though there's Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, and Pakistan to follow later this year, that he's not a test match number three. And number five, maybe two, yes, but not number three.
Okay. What are your thoughts? Philo, there's a question coming in for you here. In fact, someone is saying, and they want you to address it. Louis' problem is his grip on the bat. Holds it too low for a tall man. Once the ball is moving, he's going to edge it. Is that right, Philo? Talk to me about Louis.
Andrew, I can say publicly, I messaged Louis actually this week about his technique and addressing his issues. Yes, the grip could be a problem because sometimes you will find that he doesn't move his back foot, but his left foot opens slightly before the ball is delivered. All he's doing is pressing forward. And to me, I find that Louis don't hit the ball. The loud when he's defending, the ball hits the bat. Normally, you see when a man defends the ball, he goes at it with a kind of commitment to really show I'm defending. So then you look to change mid-field deliveries or the innings, you find yourself struggling. And I find that what they're doing with Mikael Louis, because that, as I said, no trigger movement is going back and across, they're pulling his hands away. He's tall. Oh. He doesn't really get into a stride, as they call it, stroke the ball. He would drive the ball. You got to remember that Mikael Louis has a brother called Jeremiah Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have practiced a lot in St. Kitts. If I do practice in a cage, and Jeremiah Louis swings the ball.
Right.
So he would come up batting in St. Kitts against his brother who swings the ball. And he would just be able to just come halfway and play at the balls because you're in St. Kitts. Services might be a little quicker, we don't know. So he just comes to half court and plays the ball. Mm-hmm. But as you come to test match cricket, the services are completely different. You got to try and get into a stride, which he's unaccustomed of doing.
Oh.
So he leads with it. He lets his hands go. But once you let your hands go to the new ball, you got to keep a three slips in the gully and they can catch. They don't drop a lot behind there.
No.
So that's why you find him, they're pulling his hands away from his body. But in order to keep your hands close to your body, you got to move your back foot.
Right. In addition to that, he's not a back foot player, so he lunges forward.
You have to look at
and that point you brought about his brother, I was going to bring too, because if you're playing against a brother who's 4 or 5 years older than you that has prodigious swing, he plays the faster bowlers better when he comes into his arc, so he covers up nicely. He got bowled against his spin Maharaj in Trinidad just before lunch. But my point is that he doesn't play off the back foot at all, so he is limited in his stroke play. And he utilizes his height because he gets forward a lot. But he has to play off the back where does he take his guard? He takes his guard on the off stump. So he knows where his off stump is, but he's swinging it a little wider of the off stump. So when that happens, what happens is that you're inclined as a human being to go after the ball. It's a natural inclination. That's how I used to get my wicket. And the perception you have, Andrew, is because guys who batted and play test cricket who are batsmen. Bowlers don't understand how to coach.
Gentlemen,
I'm a coach, Andrew. I work batsmen out all my life, you know.
I know.
Is a bad misconception that you have, Andrew. I listen to your question very well.
7:35, of course, we have to spend some time on the T20 team that was selected. We're going to pause for business calls. Akin Queen has joined us. We got several calls backed up and very little time. Mr. and guests, brought to an association with the good friends that is, if you work from the best show of the day.
If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 da, pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
Dr. Ford, there's a question for you further to captains. It seems that we've never selected a player based on his ability to captain. For example, we miss a wonderful opportunity to select Leon Johnson as a specialist captain, even if he batted at 8 or 9. Doc?
Yeah, I don't think our team is good enough for us to have the luxury of of selecting, you know, a brain for captaincy, because we still need 11 men. It's a team sport. Mm-hmm. And I think that experience should be the guide. And as I had said on another program, even at variance with what you thought, that captaincy should be a brain's trust when there is deficiency. If you have a captain that's weak, the captain has to have one or two players to bounce ideas off of and to come decision. And I believe that also bowlers who believe in their ability to be wicket takers should also influence the captain and tell them what they would like, and the captain can learn from that as well. So it's a big learning curve. Johnson has been a player that played for many years and did well for Guyana, but you know, as a player, he never really made the grade to be consistently there. So this is not like the Mike Brearley back when they had Mike Brearley and those other times. We can't have a man. Captain, not with the team that we have.
Fair enough. Now, Doc, just before we turn our attention to that T20 squad that was selected, we've got very little time. I know with interest that Shamar Joseph is cramping up. It happened in England, and again it happened in Guyana. And in fact, in the second innings, he looked down on pace and he didn't look himself. Could there be an underlying problem there that, I mean, a young fast bowler is getting all these cramps? Tell me, as a doc.
Well, I mean, it is quite unusual. There's no other international cricketer that goes off the field every day of a match, but yet is injured, works well, and then after an interval, he seems to cramp up. So it may be his electrolytes, it may be stretching. There's something that needs to be done, because he's a guy that was in a West Indies T20 team, so he would have been doing all the physical training and the other training, unlike other guys that would have had a layoff. So it is a bit unusual. I think the medical team should really speak to this, because it is highly irregular and concerning. As I said, he wasn't injured. So clearly his diet and a part of how he warms up after break would be important. They have to look into that. But I'm glad that he came back to the fore and showed what he can do. And you know, people like Philo and yourselves, who called for him to be in the team, are vindicated there. And because he really made a big impact.
Should have played in Trinidad. Shouldn't have played in Trinidad as well. Quickly, let's go to Akeem Green, the noted journalist there in Guyana. Akeem, in terms of the team that's been selected for the T20 series against South Africa, Rodman Powell is the captain, Roston Chase is vice-captain, Alec Athanase, Johnson Charles, Matthew Ford, Shamar Atmar, Fabian Allen, Sher Hope, Akil Hossain, Shamar Joseph, Obin Mackay, Gurdash Moti, Nicholas Poran, Sherman Rutherford, and Romaria Shepherd. Any surprises, Akeem? Akeem.
Hi again, Andrew. Yeah, a big surprise, Johnson Charles. I can't understand well, there were some other ones, but he was the biggest one in terms of you just finished the World Cup.
Yes.
There is a new cycle, essentially, for the next World Cup in India. And you select a guy like Johnson Charles. When, like, to me, at the home series, we want to begin to look at other talents, younger talents, and begin to build a squad. Because obviously, West Indies don't play a plethora of international matches. And this is a great opportunity to play at home and then look at other players, at other combinations as you build towards India. But the selection and bringing back guys who, to me, won't obviously be in the reckoning for India, you would think, is quite bemusing, to say the least.
Mm. So you would not pick Charles?
Actually, I want to ask you, who selected the squads?
Yeah, that's a good one. Akeem, have you been able to find out who selected the squad? I see Miles Bascom, the Crick, commenting on it, saying Andre Russell requested a period of rest and recovery, as well as Jason Holt, who played back-to-back five tests against England and South Africa during this period. They will work closely with CWI Science and Medical Team. So Andre Russell has requested a period of rest and recovery. This is suggesting to me that once he's rested and recovered, he will play. We gotta move on now. We gotta move on. Are you not going to start to make the preparation for the next T20 World Cup? Are you not going to do that, fellow? Talk to me. Charles is in the side. What's this all about?
Play five test matches that all finish. Jason Holder played five test matches, on four finishing 3 days. And one went 4 days because the first day was ran out and he wants rest.
Mm.
I don't understand it. We're resting players. I don't know why they're resting people. Guys need to play cricket. When next we play cricket is in November. Mm. And I don't understand them. As I was trying to understand the media releases from way back, and I was told that the media releases from West Indies, that if West Indies still the wall is dark, it could be dark blue, it could be black, dark red, or maroon. So they just give you things that keep you wondering. And Miles Bascom can continue to settle what he has to settle. He needs to understand that this cricket belongs to us. And we need to understand what is going on with this cricket.
Mm.
Nobody, how many people are going to come and watch West Indies cricket when the spectators themselves never know the players, don't know who they are, they don't speak to them, players are not interacting. You're picking teams, Johnson Charles, you pick Johnson Charles. What is the position with Kyle Mears? Has there been any explanation why Kyle Mears is not selected? You got Johnson Charles in a crucial game in the T20 World Cup. I know we have a series against South Africa. Johnson Charles is in the squad. Who is selecting our squads? Mm. Like Miles Bascom, Johnny Grave, Dr. Kishore Shallow, to come and tell us the truth. Who are picking these squads?
Mm.
Because it can't be people that got rational thinking.
I don't know.
Akeem?
Favoritism, you know?
Akeem? What are you saying, Akeem?
Yeah, I was going to say something, but yeah, I was going to say that I don't know if this is actually from a marketing standpoint that they may have gone with a lot of these quote-unquote more seasoned names in West Indies cricket and would have overlooked the developmental value as a way of probably looking to get people into the stands for the matches, and therefore you go with the quote-unquote big names as an allure to get people to come out. Maybe that's the factor that we are cricketers at this point in time, obviously aiming to fill stands as opposed to, you know, balancing the aspect of developing young players. Maybe that's a factor. But again, I don't know who is selecting the squads. I haven't gotten the releases yet explaining or an opportunity to question who makes up the new selection panel, etc. Now they would have, done away with some other guys.
Yeah,
what's the price of a ticket for the T20 matches against South Africa?
Mm.
Anybody knows the price of a ticket?
Tony, do you know? You're in Trinidad. Has anyone told you?
No. I'm doing commentary, so I'm going free.
Okay. Tell me something. Your reaction to the team, though. Any surprises, Tony?
Yeah, I think that the people express it that we have to move on from Johnson Charles. Maybe he's holding the position for Brandon King, who's injured. But we have to move on from him. He's going to be 37. And we have to look at when the World Cup is going to be played. It's going to be played February in 2026.
Right.
So that's 18 months away. So we have to give the younger players the opportunity. Alec Antunes, always not an ideal opportunity for a batsman who's just looked good in test match cricket has formulated some good scores, made a 92 against South Africa. In Trinidad, that was an excellent innings. He made a 80-something against England in English conditions. So we know that he has the ability. But do we play him now with 18 months to go instead of cementing him in test match cricket? That has to be answered.
Interesting.
The other players are great. I like the fact that Matthew Ford, because we're looking for replacement just now for Andrew Russell, and Matthew Ford fits the bill. Because he's that type of dynamic player, and we want that dynamic sort of individual in the T20 game.
What's your word, though? What's your word there, Tony? Dynamic. That's a big word to use for Matthew Ford. He's okay.
You don't know the meaning, Andrew.
Yeah, but he's okay. He's not dynamic. He's not. He's okay.
But you.
He's okay. Don't use that word. But not dynamic. He's okay.
No. I think that. Well, the word I use, Andrew, I choose that you use all types of words. But my point is,
don't big him up like that, man.
Potential to be Andrew Russell type, Andre Russell type of player.
Okay, right? So fair enough.
I like the rationale. There's a lot of experience there. The batting order is the key. All right, but Kyle Mayers, what is wrong with
Kyle Mayers? Yes, what's going on there?
World Cup. He looks scratchy, but that is
no press conference either to quiz the people we're selecting.
You don't pick him. And I am saying, remember before the World Cup, I picked Kyle Mayers in my 15. Kyle Mayers has this ability to swing the ball also.
Yes.
At the death, he can bowl a heavy ball, he can bowl Yorkers. So I think that we're missing somebody like Kyle Mayers. So there's no explanation for his not being selected. And Johnson Charles, I think he's holding a position for Brandon King. But Kyle Mayers would have been the ideal kind of player in that position.
Just before we go to Dr. Ford, would you play? Because I know the interest of the release says that Andrew Russell is resting and recovering. Would you continue to play Andrew Russell or would you move on? Tony, can you tell me?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. It's a tricky one for me because of the fact that a World Cup is going to be played in India. If we don't have somebody at that level as yet, and Andre Russell is still performing, we have to monitor Andre Russell's performance leading up to the World Cup. But we have to develop somebody, as I mentioned, like Matthew Ford. So I will be very careful about Andre Russell because of the fact that he has that kind of all-round ability.
Okay, just before we go to Dr. Ford, he's dynamic like that. Just before we go to Dr. Ford, let's quickly go to Sunil Ramsabag, who is actually there in Trinidad, to just get a feel. Hello, Sunil. Tickets are going like hotcakes there in Trinidad for the upcoming T20s.
Well, Andrew, I'm not too sure if you're talking to someone else, but my name is actually Sachin. So, tickets are, I'm not too sure about the ticket sales, but it's very mixed. Persons are very much interested in the WCPL, but the tickets are not going like hot bread, as we expect, and during the week. The Sunday game with the West Indies playing first, and of course, the WCPL taking. Tickets are going for that game. But the other games, not at all.
So you don't expect people to go and watch the West Indies, South Africa T20 series? Not a lot of people.
I do expect a crowd, but you cannot expect not even a 10,000. You can probably look at maybe a 4,000 or 5,000 at most during the week. On the weekend, you can't. Because as always, persons are looking for something recreationally on a Sunday, and it's a family atmosphere as well, and you also get two games for the price of one. So I don't think anyone can really refuse that offer, but in terms of actually going to look at the game during the week, it's a difficult one to judge, because a lot of persons, the game is at 3 p.m.
That's 3 p.m., yes.
During the usual... That's the usual business hours for most people. Apart from that, Trinidad is currently suffering from a heavy case of traffic, a traffic virus that's ongoing in Trinidad. So taking all those factors into consideration, I do not expect a big turnout for the game on Friday, and I also do not expect a big turnout for the game on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. What are the prices like? Can you give us an idea what it would cost to get into one of the games, Sachin?
I did not check the ticket prices. I will be lying to you and your listeners if I told you the price. I'm unsure of the price of the tickets.
Mm. All teams in on the 17 tournament going to cricket on Friday. That's a note that just actually came through. So at least they're going to have people. So they're not talking about these games in Trinidad. There's no buzz. There's no feel to it. Is that what you're saying, Sachin?
No. There isn't much feel. There is talk about it on the various news networks. The news network that I work on, we promote it. We get feedback from the media officer of Cricket West Indies, whether it's attached to the men's team. We get some notes, we get some pictures, we get some videos and interviews from the players and the coaches, etc. But that's as much as we can do from a news perspective or in terms of spreading the word that the West Indies will be in town to face the Proteas in three T20s, which, the West Indies are known proficiently for, but they have lulled away slightly over the last two or three years. But no, there isn't much buzz about it, and it has me a bit concerned that if persons are really truth and in fact, if they are still interested in T20 cricket with the West Indies.
Oh dear. All right, Sachin, thanks for coming through and talking to us, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
Yeah, you take care, guys. Nice
All
chatting.
Right.
Have
so
a good one.
Sachin Ramsubag, I got the name correct. They're very much indeed talking to us there from Trinidad and Tobago. He's saying that ticket sales are not going all that well. What's the weather like there, Tony, in Trinidad? Good weather? You getting lots of rain? I've just in Guyana for several days, and in fact, we just had a little bit of rain on the Saturday, but it's really very hot in Guyana. No rain at all. What's it like in Trinidad?
The morning period this morning, it was very, very hot. And then when I was coming back from coaching, it poured down with rain.
So wow.
We had fluctuating weather. Yeah, it was really thundering down with rain. And it varies. It varies. Sometimes it's really hot and sometimes rain comes. So, yeah,
we need
the season, Andrew.
Dr. Ford, you like the T20 squad?
Okay, well, I did mention my reservations about Johnson Charles being there, but if it is that Brandon King's absence means the cupboard is bare, then I guess that's the only rationale. But I think that you know, going forward, we can't really have cricketing dinosaurs being a part of the team. So I wouldn't really see a Russell coming back. But what surprised me with the team was the fact that we have three left-arm spinners, and that's highly unusual. You have the all-rounder Allen, you have Hussein, you have Moti, we have no leg-break bowler, we have Chase bowling off-spin. So I don't think we need to have three. I think we should have two. And as you said, we really have to really say what's happened to Mears. Is Kimo Paul hurt? Is Young Springer hurt? Is Drake's hurt? You know, because there are lots of all-rounders out there that we have to consider. Yes,
yeah.
Matthew Ford bowls pretty well, but I don't see Matthew Ford as a batsman, at least not yet. So I think this is a game of all-rounders and people that can contribute on all three sides of the ball. So, but I don't think we need three left-arm spinners in one squad.
Okay, so what are your expectations for the South Africa side?
Look, we're looking at this series as an experimental one. I think after the highs of the T20 World Cup final, and I'll call it a minimal low, it is a rebuilding phase. I mean, the next World Cup is, if you think about it, isn't too far away in February, March 2026. So I think this is one of the games where guys like Rasif Anderson and Kwenama Parker, who did well in the Under-19 World Cup, get an opportunity. You look at it, Neil Bartman, also excelled at the World Cup, was also getting an opportunity. For looking, there's a Patrick Kruger plays for the Warriors, Jason Smith plays for the Dolphins, Lizard Williams also making a comeback. So it's some of the fringe players who I ordinarily, Donovan Ferreira being included in that group, wouldn't be players who'd actually make, outside of Neil Bartman, would make the main side. However, though, you'd find that it is an opportunity for guys to get to actually just get some game time. Ryan Rickleton had splinters for the entirety of the World Cup. So you'd find that he'd be getting an opportunity. Rice van der Tussen, he's got a white ball contract with Cricket South Africa that covers him for both 50 over and 20 over cricket, but didn't make the World Cup cut, understandably so, if you looked at the strength and the excellence of that team. So he probably will get an opportunity to play. So it's a case of a lot of fringe players and players excelled in the SA20 getting an opportunity to show their wares across these three matches.
Right. Now let's go to Tony.
I do have a question for Kaizo, actually.
Yeah, sure, Fido.
I got a question. Kaizo, have the T20 franchise leagues hurt South Africa cricket?
Not yet, because remember that the idea here is that the SA20 and the T20 leagues are to also supplement the incomes of the players. A significant challenge you have in South Africa is the strength of our local currency, the rand. And once players get an opportunity to play overseas and earn in dollars, then it becomes difficult to deny them that opportunity. So there are particular NOCs in place with the South African Cricket Association, CSA, that allow players to participate in overseas leagues. There are some where they are able to be pulled back. Let's say if a player is playing in the CPL, for example, if South Africa have a series, and that player is contracted to CSA, that player's NOC can be then withdrawn. So for them to actually play in the national team. However, though, when it comes to the IPL, it's different. The IPL supersedes whatever international commitment there is. So that's why over the past 2 years, we've seen players leaving the national team and go play in the IPL. Also, that is also applicable with the SA20, which is why we sent a second string team, because the main players had to be available for the SA20.
Oh, I see. Tony, we just got another minute or two left in the show. Your expectations, three T20s there in your own backyard. Do you think we can win it? Tony?
Yeah, I think that we have the resources to do that. Obviously, the South Africans got into the World Cup final. They've been led by an excellent captain in Makram. And he has shown unequivocally that he can take South African cricket forward in a T20 scenario. And he's done quite well, just missing out on winning the World Cup against India in that final. But I think that we have the resources to do that. Our players are very experienced. They've been playing franchise cricket across the world. And obviously in the IPL too, they've been prominent in the IPL. So we have a combination of players. And I like the balance, except for one person in Johnson Charles, but I like the balance in youth and experience there. So I think that we can win against South Africa.
Okay, Philo, 30 seconds. Can we do it, Philo?
Yeah, I think that West Indies can beat South Africa in this T20 series. It's not going to be easy, but South Africa, obviously, as Tony said, are being led by Aiden Markham, a very good leader. West Indies will have to draw all the experienced players within that squad, and they have to get on the ground running. A lot of them just came up with their hand boots to Andrew playing cricket in England, so it's not like they're not match fit. They should be match fit and ready, and they should know the conditions at Taruba and just exploit them and do well in this T20 series.
Dr. Ford.
Towards that World Cup in 2026.
Dr. Ford, 30 seconds. Can we do it?
A lot of the South African top players are missing, so this is our best opportunity to beat them here. So we should be able to do it, or we have to really search ourselves.
Looks like tickets will start at $7.50. This actually constitutes a media blackout and should be addressed by the higher leadership of the organization. Media houses in Trinidad should raise an alarm and ask why they cannot interact with the West Indies team and call for answers. What a comment. Beautifully said indeed. All right. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming on Mason and Guest Fellow. It's always a pleasure to have you, Dr. Ford. Anthony Gray, who wants to play Andrew Russell Kai. So it's good to have you. Of course, a little bit earlier, we had Neil Barry. I'm Andrew Mason. Hey, it's hoping for a better tomorrow. It's good night.